July 2nd, 2018, Los Angeles. This is the Los Angeles podcast. I'm Hayes Davenport, Scott Frazier. We like to mix it up a little bit every time. Yep. We record in a different location. We switch up the day of the week the show comes out.
Yeah.
We're trying different things. Not because the show isn't a huge hit. It is. Of course, obviously it is.
We just like to keep people guessing.
Yes. And this time we have essentially a third co-host for this episode. She didn't agree to that.
I'm not getting paid for that.
No.
Neither are we.
Certainly not like we are. she thought she was going to be a guest, but we wanted to have her here for the whole episode. Any single topic that I thought about to discuss with Alyssa Walker was a waste of her presence here. Alyssa is at the absolute top of local LA journalists. She used to work at Gizmodo, R.I.P.
Gizmodo.
Yeah, R.I.P. Gizmodo, probably. Jumped ship a couple years ago, ended up at Curbed, is now their urbanism editor. But so you write a lot of national stories, but you still write a lot of stuff that's LA specific too.
Exactly. Yeah. And look at maybe national issues through the lens of LA. Also,
yeah.
So,
you are a multimodal transportation enthusiast, which means you enjoy all kinds of transportation, SUVs, hatchbacks, pickups, 18 wheelers, monster trucks, anything. The more cylinders,
yeah,
the better.
The higher the carriage, I think, too.
Yes.
Also. Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as there's combustion engine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. No, Alyssa hates cars. She's
let's not start with that.
Oh, did they get to you? The car lobby got to you. Alyssa supports alternate modes.
Well, you can't call them alternate modes.
Car should be the
alternate
modes.
I support a lot of choices.
Okay.
So how about that? Options.
Yes.
Yeah. I support options.
Options. Like school choice. It's the same kind of.
Wow.
No, I'm just
SUVs
kidding.
And charters. That is actual. Those are.
Yeah.
Those are the people that are listening to this
yep.
show
yeah,
right now.
That's right. And so we wanted to talk about a few different articles that Alyssa has written recently for Curbed within the last couple months, cover a range of topics. Walker Topic Ranger.
Wow. That's good. Huh?
Just late at night, I just lie awake. I can't really go to sleep until I come up with a truly great segment title like that one.
I sleep a lot easier than you, clearly. Because I don't do that.
And for this segment, we thought often you write these articles and then people show up in the comments for these articles.
Oh, they show up.
On Curbed. But often these people are like a voiceless horde. Like they don't really get to express themselves directly to you. So we thought we would be a voice for the voiceless, read the comments to you. Give some of these people a chance
to have their very valid, very well reasoned arguments heard.
Heard, yeah,
right.
Completely non anonymous, and attributable. Also.
Attributable to Hayes at this point.
Yeah.
Hayes, are these you?
Some of these.
Just tell us which one you are. Tell us which commenter
okay.
you are.
I think you'll be able to tell. We want to start. All these subjects are very divisive. All of these are kind of play out as these life or death issues, really, in LA. These things, people get very, very angry about them. Perhaps nothing more so than scooters.
Scooters make people mad.
People are very mad about the scooters.
I mean, well, even when you were riding them around, I was riding scooters around in Venice on Thursday, and people were yelling at me for no reason.
What are they yelling
at you?
Like, get out of the way, or you're an idiot.
Stop
and
it!
Like, yeah, I mean, and I was just like, I don't think, I mean, it's just because of my mode, which is something my mode of transportation, people were like, you know,
which is so weird.
Stereotyping me.
Because I see people doing the like hoverboard shit on like Fairfax or whatever.
Still?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are a lot. There are a lot
I'm
of
surprised
those.
There Nobody are any still that aren't like scorched.
spontaneously combust.
Like a garbage heap being harvested for their raw lithium in China.
People riding them around. Nobody yells at them. I actually haven't seen a Segway tour in a while, but nobody yelled at the Segway
tour. They're tourists. Still out in Santa Monica. They right? still have those. Yeah. I mean, you go to those places now to rent. You used to just be able to rent bikes like right. on the boardwalk and stuff. And now there's like all kinds of things.
So like this is the latest in what has been for many years a trend towards this kind of electric mode of transportation that's like faster than walking speed.
Yeah.
Scooters generate a really peculiar amount of like just irate behavior though.
Yeah, everybody hates them on both sides.
It's coupled with the sidewalk storage issues, I mm-hmm. think, right? So people are like doubly mad at where they are, where they are, where they aren't.
Yeah. Pictures of scooters tipped over on the sidewalk. My feed is full of these things. People being like, I could have died tripping over this scooter.
But yet, people take pictures of them and they never pick them up. Like, right. I have seen people walking down the street, take a picture of them and like laugh or whatever, and then you don't pick them up. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?
Especially if you're coming from a place of, I hate these things and I hate the people that use them. That's one thing. But what I see is never couched in that specific rhetoric, although it sounds like you're getting some of that on the street.
I think I like, they want me to be on the drivers want me to be on the sidewalk and the walkers want me to be on the street. So I was just like, I'm going to ride in the street and mine around.
What I see on Twitter, though, is like, this is a safety and accessibility issue. And it's so bad that people that have different sidewalk access needs could be impeded from getting around the city because of this scooter in the middle of the sidewalk, and then they don't pick it up.
Yeah,
which seems to me like pretty strange. Like, if you're actually concerned with people being able to move freely about the neighborhood, then it seems like you would make an effort to do that.
I want to read a tweet from there's an LA Times columnist named Robin Abkarian, who I like. And she was very vocal when against Michael Farrow, the old CEO. She was very loud in her hatred of him, and that was very cool.
That was funny. Yeah.
But she lives on the West Side. She hates scooters. Here's a tweet that she had a couple days ago. 2 weeks ago, I helped clean the bloody wounds of a first-time bird rider. Same day, saw double riders tumble into street. Putting this out again, if you or someone you know has been injured in a bird accident, please get in touch. And then her email address. It sounds like an ambulance chaser.
Yeah,
like
accidentes of scooters. Yeah.
There was also an outlet. You've ever the one, there was a column by Nate Jackson, the former football player. The headline was Bird Scooters Are Ruining Venice. And it was all about how scooters give you the ability to ride by homeless encampments without really paying attention to the real problems of Venice.
If you're on a scooter, you are just bypassing all of the things that come with living in an urban neighborhood like Venice.
Yes.
Unlike being in a car.
Yeah. For all of these people, it's they're really going to be mad when they hear about cars.
Right.
Cars are great for driving by homeless encampments and ignoring them.
Yeah.
Much better than scooters. And
no crashes where there was blood. Nope. Yeah, right.
Bloody wounds, not just wounds.
I think bloody people wounds. Would readily volunteer, by the way, that they are happy to drive rather than get on the train where they would have to be surrounded by strangers who potentially are homeless and have problems that they don't want to deal with on a daily basis. So
yes, I'm not sure they would happily volunteer that.
They would. But they would. They do it to me all the time anyway. Every time I mention that I ride the train, I get volunteered that information.
So Alyssa, you wrote a pro scooter tract for Curbed.
It's part of a series. There's more coming. I have more.
Yeah.
I couldn't just fit in one story. I have like three more.
You said scooters are the future. Kind of summarize the argument if you dare.
Well, okay. My daughter uses a kick scooter, not a regular, not a electric scooter or a shared scooter, obviously, because you're not supposed to put your kids on the bird scooters.
She, that would not work.
She could barely reach that thing. But
yeah.
But I was saying that I had never really, if it was like, if you had caught me and asked me this question like 2 years ago, I would have been like, oh, scooters look dumb. They are for kids. Mm. They are not like a real transit solution for the city. And I wrote another story recently about how we shouldn't stereotype people based on how they get around, because they might not have a choice. But different issue of that, where I talked about that one Venice, Scooters Marine Venice story. But I think for me, I didn't realize like the efficiency and the portability of a scooter. And electric scooters are a little bit heavier, of course, but my daughter can keep up with us now when we get around. And we, you know, have just had another kid, so I really sometimes need her to be able to transport herself places around. And I really just started to understand that the scooter itself can be this very powerful tool. I'm not sure it even needs to be electric, but that's no. kind of like a cool part of, if you need to get somewhere faster, that in between a car and a bike, and, or, you know, you can probably go as fast as a bike, depending on where you're going, walking in a car. But like, I definitely used the tool of that. Like, I was in one part of Venice and I had to try to somehow attempt to get to another part of Venice. And I think, and then I was, you know, I was working and I was trying to like maximize my time. I need to get there fast. I need to meet someone. And I grabbed a scooter. It was right in front of me. And I got to where I was going really fast. And I could have walked around and found bike share. I'm sure I have apps that allow me to do that. But it was a great tool for that one moment to solve that one problem. We need more tools like that. I'm not saying all scooters are the future, but also like different types of small electric vehicles that are like this, that are either shared or ubiquitous enough that somebody who might not feel comfortable getting on a scooter or putting their kid on a scooter, which you're not allowed to do, could help you get families get around and help people get around. Because like in Detroit, they now have this adaptive bike share system with like these tricycles and these cargo bikes, and you could have electric cargo bikes. So why not just like have millions of options all over the city instead of just one type of scooter, basically, that's serving people?
Do you have any issues with, that's Bart, he really wants to be a guest on the show. The studio doors are open today, we should say. It's a little hot, so we're allowing nature into the podcast.
I should say, I actually told Hayes that we just needed bird song in the background while we were talking about yes. bird.
Yeah, that's right.
He actually,
I just laid in the sound file. Do you have any issues with Bird specifically? Are there ways that you would manage a scooter company like this that are a little different from how it's being executed now by Bird?
I think that the model of deploying things to figure out how they work and then treating the issues is something that is needed right now in our age of climate crisis and car crisis, congestion crisis. So yes, let's just try things and see if they work. And
the forgiveness, figure it out. Not permission.
Well, I'm not saying we should break laws. I'm not saying we should make people mad, but if we wait around for the government to come up with the solutions, and you know, I've been waiting for the Metro Bike Share to come to my neighborhood since it launched, whenever, like, what was that, 2 years ago? It's still not in my neighborhood. I would use it every day to get to the train, or, you know, right now I'm using the bus to get to the train, which is fine, or I walk, but like I would use that thing mm-hmm. every single day if it was in my neighborhood. A Bird scooter shows up in my neighborhood the other day, you know, I would use it. I would use that because it was there. So let's look at just how we can drop down every barrier. And that's also like dedicated bus lanes. And that's a lot of other solutions that need to just be tried yesterday. I mean, we can't wait anymore.
If it were a city-funded scooter pilot program, that would be like, by the Olympics, we will have these scooters. And they would only be downtown. They would only be downtown. Which is probably the worst place to use.
Well, yeah. Scooters. I mean, I think the city's regulations that they're trying to put together, and every city is going to be different, which is going to be really complicated. I mean, looking at things in a regional way is a little bit smarter, but it's going to be hard to get everybody on board. But the idea that these could fill in the gaps in areas that didn't have access right now, like a lot of places in the Valley have been like asking for bike share forever, and they could have this dockless bicycles and scooters, you know, first, and that's great. Like, that's what we should be doing. But also just like, give people options. Like, I need three different ways to get around based on if I have a kid with me, if I am carrying groceries, if it's hot, you know, I need more options. So give me more options.
Where are we at now with the scooters? Where are they legal? Where are they illegal? There's a lot of like fast regulation being passed.
There was a hearing this week in the Transportation Committee and Council. I think just more discussion about things like caps and fines, you know, just this bigger regulatory structure. I think West Hollywood said absolutely not.
West Hollywood banned them outright. Santa Monica went, I think Santa Monica went the same route as LA, basically with like a limit on the number that are allowed to be in city limits. They're a little bit further along in the process than LA.
Does that mean that if you're riding through West Hollywood, you will get ticketed?
I think you just can't park it there. I think you could probably, I don't know if they could stop. Because like also people own their own scooters and those are legal. So like,
I'm seeing Razors come back.
There are so many, but that's the thing too that I, you know, there I want to point out. Yeah. I mean, the thing, it's the people I talk to at Micro Kickboard, and those are like the kids' scooters that you see everywhere. If you go to like Echo Park,
this
Lake
is what your daughter has.
Yeah, my daughter.
Did she get a little freebie for these articles?
She's sponsored now. Yeah. She's kind of like. But these kids, what the guy told me is like, there's a group of kids that had these growing up and they just keep graduating to a bigger and bigger size. And some of them, depending if they need to, switch to the electric version that they just started selling. So they have like changed their product based on this cohort of scooting kids. And you will see these kids had Razor scooters when they were kids and they've bought the bigger version and they're just taking them to get to work. And like, it's you can recognize that certain scooters are Bird and Lime, but there's a lot of other people taking their own scooters or other things around.
Yeah, I had a Razor. Did you have a Razor?
I actually want to say in the fullness of time, I get to do a little bit of finger wagging at my parents who didn't want to buy me a Razor because it was a fad.
Well, one thing about the first wave of Razors, it came out at the same time as Jackass was really popular among my age cohort. So what we would do with them was take them onto the top of a sloped driveway and ride them all the way down into a curb at the other end and then fly off onto the grass.
Literally just try to hurt yourself as much as possible.
And see how far we could go. So at the time, I could see parents watching that happen out their window and thinking that this is maybe like a dangerous trend. Anyway.
But also, like, to skateboards. I mean, don't forget that, like, people have been riding skateboards in the city, and you can go to any part of the city and see a person from any background on a skateboard. Yes, there are electric skateboards now, but let's not forget, like, the beauty and innovation and, I don't know, the real, truly multimodal streets that we have. Let's design for those people, everybody, to use safe streets.
Yeah. One of the things that always is striking to me is if the argument against having these kind of options essentially boils down to like, if you want to have better mobility around the city, you need to have the personal storage space in your apartment to keep a scooter or a bike. Or I got rid of my bike several years ago because I didn't have room in my apartment to actually store it, which was awful.
Yeah.
I wish that I still could do that, but having the ability to actually like go outside of my door and get a bike share bike or whatever would, like you said, Alyssa, revolutionize my ability to get around the city. It would be a very different experience for me. And saying that only people that are rich enough to have a certain amount of space can have access to those sort of options strikes me as distinctly, you know, just ugly.
Yeah. Well, can we let the people speak, please?
Sorry, I'll stop.
This is a comment from Cleavon Little. This is a commenter you're familiar with.
Surely that is his real name.
No, I'm sure it's the guy that played Sheriff Bart in Blazing Saddles who died in 1992. An AI of his brain is still living in the curb comment.
That's what commenters probably are. Oh, they think they're like this big,
long dead people just doomed to comment. Okay, Cleavon says, the average scooter trip is 1.5 miles. Heaven forbid a millennial having to walk that distance. Isn't that what you buy Toms for? Or is that just for foot selfies? Instead, Bird scooters litter the public sphere like so many abandoned shopping carts, hobos, and other urban detritus.
Oh my God.
So there's a little politically charged comment. But maybe, you know, if we stick to his initial argument that 1.5, basically that scooters are making people scoot instead of walk. And these Bird scooters, you're not burning any calories at all.
That was the football player's argument as well. He was mad people weren't more physically active in that op-ed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why he walks everywhere, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, no, he did. Yeah, he did say his primary mode was driving. But, okay, here's what I'll say to that. One third of the trips that we take as in vehicles are 2 miles or less in this country. That was the latest travel survey, national travel survey that came out, a household travel survey. So you can argue that, yes, we should all be walking that 1.5 miles. A lot of people won't do it in LA in the summer because of our horrible situation for sidewalks and shade. We'll talk about that later. But also just like giving people the option, like let's give them the option to not be in a car. Like that's my argument, because most people will just walk inside, grab their keys, get in their car or call a Lyft. Yep. Or whatever. So
Hayes, your burner account has asked a good question.
Well, I also want to say, I want to respond to the Toms part, because Toms make your feet look really ugly. And so I would never take a foot selfie.
I love this guy really is mad about Toms and millennials. I will thinking about the scooters are coming farther and farther east. Baxter Street now is one way. Only the steepest street in Los Angeles.
It's a scooter only zone now.
Yes. Yeah. And so the perfect, imagine the stunt you could do going down Baxter or like Dean Street right by the reservoir. You could probably go down Dean Street, hit the curb and make the middle of the Silver Lake reservoir.
Yeah. You get all the way.
On one of those, especially with a little like electric
Red Bull.
Juice.
Yeah. Red Bull should just set up a ramp, like a jump at the end. Uh-huh. And we should have this. Yeah. What else are we going to use Baxter for?
CKY shirt on.
Let's talk about shade and trees.
Oh, I thought you were just going to read another comment.
And sidewalks right now. No, we're okay. No, there's shade about that as well. You wrote an article a couple months ago about how LA's tree canopy is disappearing. This is something I personally have not really noticed. I don't think people walking around have. You'll note like one tree here and there going away. But it's going really fast. How fast is it going and why?
I mean, it also depends on what part of town you live in. Because every time I write these stories, too, they're like, what are you talking about? My neighborhood has tons of trees. So there have been several studies done now showing that our trees are being depleted at an alarming rate in the city. And yes, we've been in a drought for a few years. Trees have died. There was a census, I think, taken specifically of trees in parks, and they know that a lot of trees have died, and they're trying to replace them.
Because of beetles and
there's a whole range of things. But yeah, water, and then water makes them more susceptible. Lack of water makes them more susceptible to different things like beetles and other diseases, like funguses and other bacterial things. So there's that, but then there's also the problem with the city itself, and our maintenance has kind of just dropped off, and it did it around the same time that the drought got really bad. So there's, all these like cycles of maintenance and watering, and where they're checking on every single tree to make sure every tree is all good. Well, that kind of, you see the kind of graph go where, every tree needs to be checked on about 5-7 years. We were going up to like 20, 30, 40 years that between trees getting checked in on by the city. So if you're a homeowner and you have trees out in front of your house and you're watering them and taking care of them and you're, paying attention to them and getting them, you could pay to get them trimmed if the city didn't come by, or you're making a 311 request for them to do that. If you're not in an area where people have extra money to take care of their trees or plant them in the first place, there are tons of areas in the city that never got street trees planted, or if they're undergoing a lot of development, or if they're for all sorts of reasons. And the other thing that's really troubling is that a lot of trees are getting removed because of development. And you'd think, that's actually good. We're building taller buildings. We're, maybe densifying some of the city. But it's actually people who are like McMansionizing their houses where they've seen some of the biggest problems. Because you think of the lot that you have. You've got a lot that has maybe 5 or 6 trees on it, and you want to make your house bigger. So you literally pull out every single tree, then you plant a few maybe. Or a lot of people who I know who want to do the right thing for the drought literally took out their trees thinking that I want to make a xeriscape yard. Yeah. I don't think I should have a tree.
I can see that being something dumb that I would do.
Well, yeah, of course you'd think that a tree uses a lot of water and, but actually keep the tree. The tree is going to help in all these different ways to keep our city cool. And there's a big study coming out from JPL. I got a peek of it from one of the researchers that I talked about in my story. The extreme heat situation in the city is going to get very bad very quickly. So we're talking about 100 degree days. One's coming up next weekend. That number could maybe triple or quadruple in certain parts of the city in just a few years. So we're talking about, how do we keep our city cool? How do we keep people safe? And people could actually be helping the situation by planting more trees and taking care of them when the city hasn't gotten its act together, which is still a concern. There's still this problem now where they passed this rule in council the other day where instead of replacing a tree, you can just give money to the city and they can decide when and where to spend the money. But they don't have a plan for where trees are needed. They haven't done their tree census yet for all the street trees. So we got to figure out something else to like make sure our streets are, you know, shaded and healthy and safe. And, you know, it's good. Trees are really the one thing I think everybody agrees on.
Yeah, this is the one. Exactly. I mean, so many like improvements, like bike lanes, whatever, you hear like, this isn't Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Like, but when, in terms of like nice tree lined streets, people are just like, oh yeah, that'd be really nice if we were more like Amsterdam in that way.
And my argument is we need to be more like Sacramento. Sacramento, I don't know if you've been there recently or, you know, in the last like 10 years.
I feel like I went there.
Okay, but think about it. They have the most amazing tree canopy. They have made it, you know, their absolute priority. And they have some really hot days. They have 100 degree days. You know, they, you could argue maybe they have better access to water, but it's a, we can do it. Like, it's not something that we can't do here. And yes, LA didn't have trees to begin with. If you look back at pictures from, you know, when the Pueblo was starting to rise out, there were really no trees just around the bodies of water. But in order to help cool down our city now that we've urbanized it and kind of hardscaped it, we have to put the trees back in, and we have to create, we need trees that create a canopy, not just palm trees. Sorry.
These trees kind of compete with scooter freedom a little though, don't they? Because right near me, there's a big ficus that is beautiful and creates shade on both sides of the street. It's like so huge. It has exploded the sidewalk to a degree that like it's barely walkable.
Well, the ficus is notorious for doing that.
Yeah, and they're great shade trees, but they will truly fuck up a sidewalk.
Okay, my response to that is they don't have to. That is a maintenance problem. That means that the city did not come by and prune the roots and prune the tree's canopy itself to make sure that they don't explode. You can go to other parts of the Los Angeles area. You can go to like South Pasadena. You can go to Santa Monica. They don't have the same problems. They have some, like, of course you can, you know, trees can mess stuff up. But they don't have the same level of problems because they've taken care of their trees this whole time. And they've widened their parkways. They widen their sidewalks. They've said, hey, let's take some of that space back for parking cars or moving cars and do these, you know, kind of cool meanders of the sidewalk or these bump outs on corners that like allow you the stormwater to, you know, be filtered down back into the water table. So there's better solutions than just saying, this ficus tree is a nuisance. Like, let's cut it out. Like, I have one on my street too. It's, if it was gone, I would be devastated. I will be in that tree making sure it does not get cut down.
LA's boulevards in particular are so devoid of tree cover in a way that is immediately apparent if you go to other cities and you see that they have tree cover. And I mean other cities like West Hollywood and Santa Monica. Yeah. Like, you can follow the same road. You can follow Santa Monica Boulevard and you will know when you have left the city of LA because there will be trees all of a sudden. But it's really terrible because the way that you've laid it out, the places, the parts of the city that are losing their tree canopy the most rapidly are the places where people are also much more dependent on active transportation, walking and biking, and just the intensification of the urban heat island specifically there is directly negatively impacting so many people's lives and making it harder to get around the city, making people change their daily routines and avoid going outside specific times of day. And people just drive down Vermont. They don't necessarily care that there are no trees for like several miles at a time. If you live in East Hollywood, if you live in K-Town and you're walking around, it's very obvious and it impacts your experience of the city.
I mean, this is kind of like a central question of this show, I think. But I wonder what would happen in a lot of these lower income neighborhoods if you took one street and you added a really nice tree canopy. What that would do to the rent on that street. Like, I don't know if there's a way to simultaneously be conscious, but it's true. I mean, like, as with any improvement, bike lanes, like any other like safety measure, what you could simultaneously do in some of these neighborhoods, whether it is development or anything else, to keep rents down.
But you're exactly right. I mean, the story I read about sidewalks a few years ago is that some people associate good sidewalks with displacement and gentrification because they haven't had good sidewalks in their street, their neighborhood in so long.
Yeah.
The only people that can pay to put in good new sidewalks are developers when they're like ripping out of, you know, old building and, you know, adding. So I do totally agree. And you do see that kind of thing when you walk through some of these neighborhoods and like all of a sudden there's like 10 trees on a corner and then there's like no trees anywhere else. Yeah. And like, yeah, that's how bad it's gotten in the city for some of our public infrastructure that
you have to be scared when a tree shows up on your block.
I think that's absolutely right. And part of it is I think I sympathize a lot with these arguments. I wrote about urban transportation for a while, and there was always this sort of like two-faced side of real estate reporting where on one side people were saying, you know, people who are concerned about gentrification are concerned for stupid reasons and like we should just not pay attention to them. And then the other side was saying like, this neighborhood is gentrifying. Buy a house here now and it'll make you a boatload of money soon.
Was that a curbed comment?
No. Well, maybe. I don't know. Maybe that was Cleavon Little. Well, I'm a little bit sympathetic to that. I think what needs to happen... So the answer, though, can't just be like, no trees, no investment or whatever. We need to change the conversation basically because LA has existed in a way for the past 50 years where the only thing that the inner city communities in LA know is disinvestment and neglect.
Mm-hmm.
So like attention is not something that people expect or know how to process
or trust. Nor should they.
And I think that part of the problem there is what you were talking about, Hayes, is like what happens if you say, you know, Vermont Avenue, this is the way it's generally pitched. We're going to rebrand it. We're going to make mm-hmm. it a tree-lined street mm-hmm. and it's going to be so great. And oftentimes that like wholesale rebranding is kind of seen as like, well, what about the community that exists here and has thrived here despite the municipal neglect that has gone on? And you have really like the creation of something that shouldn't be seen as an amenity being made into an amenity.
It should be a baseline
thing. Yeah. So I think the goal, didn't Villaraigosa said he wanted to plant like a million
trees? He had a million tree plan. Yeah. I mean, you feel like that was a big thing at the time. Like Bloomberg also had a million. He actually did plant a million trees. I think there are people who don't want trees. Business owners sometimes don't want them in front of their businesses because they feel like you can't see their signs or it somehow like blocks access. But again, like that's part of our car culture because it's probably they're blocking the sign from to people driving by. But one thing that they did do, and this is part of that disparity you were talking about, every property homeowner can get 7 free trees from the city. Depends on you go to this thing called City Plants, you sign up. They have people that come in. You can either plant them yourself. You can take a course to learn how to take care of your trees.
Any kind of tree?
You can pick from the varieties that are allowed. You know, you can't. I don't think
fruit
you can
trees?
You can't have a palm tree. I think you could maybe have a fruit tree. I'm not sure. That's a good question. Wow. You can also ask the city to replace a street tree for you. But if you're not a homeowner, how would you know that, first of all? Or if you go to your, you know, landlord and ask for this and they're like,
not interested.
Yeah. Don't need more of a mess for whatever the gardener, those damn jacarandas, uh-huh. you know?
Yes.
So I think it is pointing to more of that issue of like who could afford to manage their property themselves and who is allowed to plant things on their own property and who is going to make sure that these trees make their way into the right places.
Here's an annoying thing about tree canopy in the city that is only tangentially related, but it drives me insane. All these new parks are rebuilding. Grand Park, the Cornfield Park, the State Park nearby. None of them have any tree canopy whatsoever.
Well, they're little.
No shade.
They're baby trees. They're
baby trees.
Right now.
Yeah.
We're
well,
thinking the long game here.
I guess, but they're not something that you can lie under. And one might assume that this is by design because they don't want people to maybe go to sleep in these parks or spend a long time in them.
And that's another argument against planting fruit trees in a lot of places because they think people will come get food.
These rail riders will stuff their bindles with
that's a real
oranges.
Thing it's
unbelievable
a real thing. It's a real thing
let's let the people speak. Fruki Stevens asks, just asking questions. Alyssa.
Change my mind.
Alyssa, why are you too cowardly to mention the geoengineering being done with our sapphire clear blue skies we once enjoyed just 10 years ago? Why are cars and roads your hot button issue while alchemized clouds are blocking the blue skies? Not a concern. Weeks of clear blue skies we once enjoyed in LA is something your kids will never get to see at this rate. Time to be brave and observe the skies for a week or two. Time-lapse cameras are quite helpful. Your response.
Her response. She's clearly part of the Guild of the Alchemists. So I don't know if you're going to get a straight answer from Melissa here.
Well, actually, I wrote a story about June gloom, about like, yeah, if we're, because my thought was our sunny day is going to be, sunny hot day is going to be more the norm because of climate change, and how does that affect our, you know, our June gloom, which kind of keeps, is like a natural air conditioner at the beginning of the summer. And the scientist I spoke with, also at JPL, said that we have more clear sunny days than we used to, first of all. And June gloom seemed like it was worse and more prevalent because of air pollution. And because our skies are cleaner now, we're going to have maybe less June gloom because of that reason.
You had a tweet that I think about a lot, like a year ago, where you gave a June gloom name to every other month. Oh, yeah. And I was thinking about it today because it's July now, and it was very gloomy this morning. Yeah. The July one was not so good, I have to say.
I think we need to workshop it.
It was July sky, but next month's is really good. Do you remember what it was?
Foggest.
Okay, let's move on to the next topic. There's a gas station in Silver Lake.
There are a lot of gas stations you wrote about.
But this one is very special.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's on Silver Lake Boulevard in what they're now calling like Little Precious Silver Lake Jewel Village or whatever. They are trying to rebrand the area around like Botanica and that strip near the reservoir as something else. And there's a gas station there that has been bought to be redeveloped into housing. How many units? 15 units?
Yeah, I don't think it was bought. I think the owner, who's owned it for quite a while, has decided that he wants to. He has plans to develop it into housing. Well,
that's shameless. He should know of its history then.
So because as soon as he made this move to convert it to housing, these people who apparently had been very longtime gas station fans. It emerged from the woodwork and said, this cannot happen. We have to go to Councilmember Mitch O'Farrell. We have to get this passed as a historical cultural monument. And they seems like are maybe going to be successful. Or have they been already?
I mean, there's two things that if it gets landmarked, I mean, well, there's all these complicated things that happen. But yeah, basically, I think the argument has been made that this gas station has some kind of relevance to like streamline, maybe modern architecture of the period.
Yeah. People like to say stuff too, that like Walt Disney once looked at it or something.
I'm sure he did. I mean, it's if you go down Silver Lake Boulevard and you're going by all these brand new restaurants and places that are people love to go to. People also complain that the traffic is really bad on this stretch of Silver Lake Boulevard because it's one of the only ways to get maybe to the freeway through there. But this gas station has been being used as like a service station or whatever you call these things.
Now it's like an auto repair shop.
Yeah, it's like an auto repair shop, but it's always just like it is jam-packed full of cars and trash, and it
looks like
you
garbage.
Have to really look closely to maybe see the little window that looks like a streamlined modern curved window. But it's also, I mean, if this had been this like important thing to preserve, why did it only come up right when the plans were delivered to the city to knock it down and put some apartments there is my question.
And this is happening all over the city. CBS Television City around like Fairfax is now being preserved, something you cannot see from the road. CBS Television City. There's that bank At Sunset and Crescent Heights, where there's a big Frank Gehry complex going up there. People want to preserve this bank
that, lost.
That has like the funny roof.
Yeah, it lost.
That lost.
Yeah.
But they still managed to get a lot of concessions, I think, in the fight. Yeah.
I don't know if Laura Lake is happy, but I think they won a considerable amount of concessions on that one.
Yeah. What? So this is this just seen now as like the most effective path to stopping development? Call me a conspiracy theorist, but it seems like people just don't want housing in these places. Well,
yeah, it's a tool. Of course, it's a tool that is used for good in many, getting things preserved is a very good thing in many cases. But yeah, it's also being used maybe not with pure intentions to stop housing from going in. And you will see the traffic argument that I mentioned is that people do think that the people living in these apartments are going to really change the traffic situation immensely, and are making an argument about density, and they don't want a taller building that might block someone else's view behind them. So they're making a lot of arguments and just kind of wrapping them into this needs to be preserved into, I guess, another restaurant. Like, I'm not sure what you would preserve it as, or if it should be chained. I don't know what we actually need.
I think there are a lot of suggestions.
Probably coffee shop.
For this would be a beautiful little, with the outdoor patio
coffee shop,
and stuff.
Yeah. So,
which everyone complains about. I live in this godforsaken neighborhood. And everyone...
there's just not enough coffee shops.
Like Botanica down the street, everyone hates Botanica who lives in that neighborhood because people come there and like they say the traffic and parking are now a huge issue.
LA Mill,
patio is too loud. Everyone hates LA Mill, deservedly. But like, not that any of these places should be beloved, but it seems like there's this hierarchy of hatred where nothing is the ideal.
Yep.
And then a restaurant cafe is the next most hateable thing. But then housing, by far, is something that cannot.
But if you looked at how many car trips are being made to, say, LA Mill or Botanica and this new, we'll call it something, maybe like Mitch's Cafe or something to honor this great legacy. I think like you look at those car trips and how many car trips of people who are in, going to live in a place that's very walkable, and would it be able to walk to, say, 365 or the Reservoir, and they could make a lot of their trips on foot or on bike. It's a bike street. Nobody believes that that will actually happen, and that there will just be however many 50 more cars coming racing through this canyon because this is being built right there. And that is could not. It, compared to like a business where people are driving to get coffee, you can't even make a comparison.
You have given me a great mental image that I will keep for the rest of this saga of Mitch O'Farrell with a little paper diner hat saying, "You want regular unleaded coffee?"
I know a lot of people personally who drive to that specific strip and will stay there basically all day long between one business or another, who would never leave that if they were able to live on that block and an apartment or something, would never leave.
Yeah.
And Silver Lake, the West Side gets a lot of grief for not building enough housing, and talking about the Expo Line plan and where we just didn't put enough density around the train. And people argue that Silver Lake is not like a transit accessible neighborhood, and that's another big argument, because like, why would you ride the 2 bus or the 704 bus, which are amazing and get you a lot of good places? But besides that point, Silver Lake has been really bad at building new housing. I mean, really bad. If you look over on Sunset, there's a huge development going up. I think it's called Vika.
And Mitchell Turner.
By Mitchell Turner, by the Rainbow Stairs. Mm-hmm. Those are the first condos built in Silver Lake in 10 years. Yeah.
I'm surprised it's not more than that. Yeah.
But still, like 10, there's been small lot developments and things like that, but this is like the first, condo situation. So you think that, we say like, oh, the West Side, but Silver Lake is maybe worse than a lot of these communities.
It is. Silver Lake has a rich history of just outright NIMBYism that goes back to the 60s. And it's kind of amazing when you look at it. Those big apartment towers that are on Los Feliz Boulevard. After that, there was like a populist uprising in LA where they, Silver Lake in particular, downzoned a huge amount of its land.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about gentrification in Silver Lake as if it's like a recent phenomenon, but the people that live around the reservoir have largely been there for, 30, 40 years and have been fighting tooth and nail against any new housing to be built. And what comes of that? Gentrification comes of that, really. Yeah.
Someday you have to come back to do the Reservoir episode. I just can't, you know, it's too long. It has to be a whole episode.
A whole a people's history of the
silver. But it's pain in my existence. Because it's all about, it's the same thing. Like, if you make this place better, more people will come here or live here, and traffic. It's always about, it's just the next step is always traffic. And there could be so many other amazing changes that could be made that could address a lot of those problems, but they're not being made, particularly making streets safe enough to walk, bike, or ride scooters on in this neighborhood.
Someone has a point about this. In the comments.
I feel like we need music every time we need like that. Hopefully you'll put that in.
I'll put it in something, yes.
Like, does it involve geoengineering?
Well, this is my favorite. Because this is a commenter named Lady Who Lunches, who has a lot of great... She has a bunch of comments in this thread that say things like, this is like blatant NIMBYism. This thing is a total eyesore. Get rid of it. This is obviously just to keep out housing. This is ridiculous. But then... She has a comment. I'm not sure. I don't think this is a joke. It says, actually, it just occurred to me that this would make the best spot for our own Officina Profumo Farmaceutica di Santa Maria Novella, which is, I guess, like perfume and cologne store. There are rumors that they are looking to locate in the neighborhood. If this were to happen, I would say, let's find another location for the proposed apartment units.
But you could also put a store on the bottom floor. Like, that's the other
thing. My point is just like... People, when it comes to this stuff, need just the slightest nudge. Right. It takes basically nothing for them to be like, oh, that would, I guess, be kind of nice to have this.
All that someone needs to do is like make a cute rendering. And there's another gas station on Beverly, closer to like Koreatown, closer to Western, that was built the same year, that has sat there forever. It's been used as a movie set for, you know, tons of films and stuff. And now these guys are turning it into a coffee shop. And so people are pointing to that one and being like, look how cute it is. Look what an asset to the neighborhood this could be. And I'm just like, yes. And there was also another gas station that got torn down in Silver Lake.
Along Rowena.
On Rowena. And guess what's going in there now? Housing.
Housing after.
Perfumery. Yeah.
And that was after an insane fight of probably 10 years.
I mean,
when that began. And I think that was another one that Walt Disney borrowed toilet paper from at some point.
But like the things that people, I mean, I don't know. I think people don't want to hear this, but yeah, you could put a coffee shop on the bottom floor. That would be great. But also like the one thing we really don't want to leave up as like landmarks to our amazing history are gas stations. I'm sorry.
We have a little housekeeping from some of our previous episodes. First of all, it came to my attention this week that we have talked about Woon Fraser, who was killed when a car crashed into him in South LA a couple months ago now. The person that ran into him in their car turned herself in, and I found a couple days ago that there have been no charges brought in that case, which seems very open and shut. It's all on video. And at the time we first started talking about it, I kind of felt bad the way you do in all of these cases. Like, part of me was like, well, it's a shame that this woman's life, she's 23, is going to be ruined by doing this. But she killed someone, and that can't just, like, go unpunished. But it is.
Yeah.
It is going unpunished.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking. So we did, I think, talk about it when Mariah Banks turned herself in originally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did.
We mentioned it. Yeah. And sort of, so Beverly Owens, Frederick Wooten Fraser's mom
mm-hmm.
had actually said before, like, you know, I'm upset that I lost my son. You know, I want to see justice done, but like, I'm upset that I lost my son. Now it's kind of becoming apparent that they might not even get that. It's very confusing.
Very confusing.
Somebody who killed a person, then fled the scene,
mm-hmm.
then painted the car a different color.
Yep.
In order to make it difficult for law enforcement to find her.
Yeah.
And then eventually under intense community, not even like the broader public, but under intense community pressure, once it became known that she was the person who did this, pressure to turn herself in. She did that. And then the police are essentially saying, you know, like, what, have a nice day?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really understand. Thing with, you know, Alyssa knows this. It's the thing with car crashes in general. The responsibility is very diffuse. There's this idea that, like, well, it's like kind of cost of doing business when it comes to cars. The accidents will happen is what people kind of think. And so, but none of that responsibility falls on any car companies. None of it falls on urban planners who have created the environments for these deaths to happen. A lot of it goes on the victim, no matter what. Pedestrian looking at their phone, someone, why were you riding bikes there in the first place? Interestingly, it also came out this week, a lot of journalists in the past few years have attributed, there's been a rise in car deaths that you've documented a lot, Alyssa.
Specifically cyclists and pedestrians.
Yes. Yeah. And a lot of people have attributed that to pedestrians looking at their phones when they cross the street. But I think it was the Detroit Free Press came out with a story this week saying that that's not really the cause. It's mostly what?
It's an increase in sales of SUVs, and you can look at the little chart that they did an amazing investigation. Like, it's something that we've all kind of talked about or, mm-hmm. or kind of theorized about. And some of these regulating agencies have kind of said no. They're like, you know, people have specifically asked them, well, what about SUVs? What about SUVs? And nobody's been willing to attribute it to that. But if you look at like the charts they made in their story, you see pedestrian deaths kind of tick back up, and it's like matches exactly the curve of SUV sales ticking back up in this country. Because for a while they went down, gas prices, whatever. Now there's hybrid SUVs. Now there's, and then just like a real push from automakers. You've seen like Ford, for example, is like, we're only making, you know, a truck and a Mustang or whatever. I can't remember. But there's just like this very hungry need for like trucks and SUVs, even if you're not hauling things. And there's a whole, you know, conversation about that, and even the way they've been marketed.
Yeah.
And the studies that they did in this Detroit Free Press story was basically like, if you get hit by an SUV, you will die.
Yep.
And if you get hit by a car, the way that a regular car or a minivan is designed, you have a better chance of surviving.
Yeah. So we have, there's like a visibility issue too with
yeah.
us,
oh
with
God, SUVs. There's so many other issues.
Yeah. But we have basically two. So previously, essentially, the what you were saying, the mainline argument was like, the rate of accidents is increasing, and it's because pedestrians and other road users who are not driving cars are paying less attention to the road because of their phones. But it turns out the rate of accidents is maybe not increasing, but it's just that we have a greater proportion of vehicles on the road where the accidents just, or the collisions are just not survivable.
Yeah. If you get
hit by it.
And that's what she was driving. The woman who hit Woon Fraser, she was driving a white SUV. So it does. It's this thing that is so intuitive, but had never really occurred to me. I honestly thought it was more drivers looking at their phone.
Well, we always said, well, of course. I mean, I'm not going to say of course, but yes, the fact that automakers are also putting like these infotainment systems that are increasingly complex into cars as well is troubling and disturbing. And then speed also, I think, was a big determinant, you know, determining factor that a lot of people would go back to, because we really had no other way to, you know, to reason, you know. We were just like, well, it must be speed, and then speed obviously kills pedestrians at much higher rates. If you're getting hit, you know, when you're walking, if you get hit at speed in a car, you're probably protected because you're also in a car, so it would make sense for the pedestrian deaths to go up. But they, as part of this Detroit Free Press story, they talked about how SUVs, like people who drive SUVs, drive them faster, and that's like another whole, you know, situation where you're in this particularly designed vehicle that makes you feel like you're invincible. I've driven SUVs, like a lot of my friends who have kids have them for that reason, because you feel safer in that car, you know. So
it's actually, why slow down? Nothing can hurt you.
Yeah, moral hazard, actually. You have more protection, so you are less likely to pay attention to the safety of
and
other
it's why
people.
A lot of autonomous vehicle people are using them, because they SUVs, keep the people inside of them safer. You know, you can put more passages in them, stuff like that. But this is a real, this is like the smoking of you know, tobacco industry covering up what they knew to be true for years and trying to make it like it was our fault for walking and looking at our phones.
Wow. The car industry has planted a bird to be extra loud outside the window while we while we talk about this. It's like an electronic bird that they're just turning up the volume on. We have gone way too long. Thank you so much, Alyssa, for coming. Thank you, commenters. Please follow Alyssa at A Walker in LA. Is that your Instagram as well?
Everything.
She has
yeah,
a great Instagram of bougainvilleas and her kids. Quickly, we also I want to go out with something. There was a city council hearing this past week on the homeless shelter in Koreatown that drew a lot of protesters from the neighborhood complaining about due process, saying they wanted a hearing, even though they were having a hearing. They were at a hearing.
Yeah.
But also a lot of people coming out in support, including lots of people who live in the neighborhood. Herb Wesson said something at the end of that hearing that I think is worth sharing on the show. Just a couple minutes of his speech that I thought we could go out with. So we're going to play that now. And thank you so much for listening. And we will be back next week. Bye.
The other big amendment members that is in the amendment submitted today, and I want everybody to hear it. I am directing the city staff to go to a facility that is located on Western Boulevard and survey and assess and evaluate if this parking lot it can accommodate an actual facility where we can have homeless stay there 24 hours. This parking lot is not across the street from the district office where I work every day. This parking lot is next, not next door to the office where I work every day. It is in my parking lot. I will work and live with people who have lived on the street. If it is feasible, I'm gonna bring them to my parking lot because I don't want anybody to ever suggest that I wouldn't make sacrifices that I'm asking them to make. I am asking for the people of this city to say we are sick and we are tired of people sleeping on the streets. Good people, do you know what's happening here in LA? We are driving past, oh my God, we are driving past homeless people and we are not seeing them. When that happens, that is the end of our humanity. The end of our humanity. And that we cannot do. We as a people in Los Angeles must rise up like a tidal wave of hope, and say enough is enough. And for the next 3 years, we're going to do everything within our power as if we have joined the service to try to get people off the streets and into safe, secure housing. That is our responsibility.